Good morning. It's great to be together again. Another beautiful, beautiful Sunday morning. And as Barry mentioned, we're starting a new series, and I am honored. Thank you, Barry. Thank you, elders, for inviting me. Thank you beforehand for putting up with me this morning. I pray deeply that what I share with you today may be useful, may be impactful. I'll just go ahead and say up front, these ideas have changed my life. And I don't say that lightly. Super, super glad if you're here today, and maybe this is your first time back in a church. The topic I'm going to talk about today, if we would have a secret agenda as a church, a secret agenda as Jesus' followers, this, I believe, would be it. So if this is your first time back in a church, maybe someone convinced you to come, promising you a meal afterwards, or maybe to meet someone pretty or cute, or whatever that reason was, I'm super glad you're here. I'm talking mostly today towards those of us that consider ourselves Jesus' followers, but you get to listen in on this secret mission if we had one. And for those of us who maybe like me grew up in the church or have been in the pews or in a Christian circle for years and years and years, I'll just tell you up front, on one hand, this topic is very simple. You've probably heard it before. The passage I'll be using, you've probably heard it many times. But I'm going to ask you, if I can beg you, not to check out. Because in the last few years, these ideas, although I heard them probably from before I can remember, have changed my life in the last few years. So that's where we're headed. As Barry mentioned, we're on the topic of going. We're on the topic of going. And for those of us that are in Christian circles, we immediately likely think of this idea, which Jesus said, of going and making disciples. Or as it might be said, as you go, make disciples. Now, just so you can be at rest and at peace, I am not going to try to convince you to sign up to be a missionary, to travel across the ocean and give your life in a jungle where they still don't have Facebook, internet, or electric. That's not what we're shooting at right now. This, I pray and truly do believe, will be a whole lot more practical. And yes, I do believe as we walk out, we can live these ideas. I'm going to be talking a bit about the why behind the what. The why behind the what. The why behind this idea, the importance of going, the importance of sharing what we have received as Jesus followers, of going to make disciples. And I'm going to be talking mostly out of a passage that we find in our Bibles that's called Luke 15. Now, real quick, Luke was a doctor. Luke was a studied professional like many of us here today. And we read, right, Luke writes that he thoroughly investigated and wrote this down. He literally says, that you may have certainty concerning the things you have been taught. That you may have certainty concerning these things that you have been taught. So Luke lived during the time of Jesus. We don't know if he actually got to see Jesus in person or not, but he investigated. And it was important enough for him, amongst all the different accounts, all the different things that people were talking about, to investigate, to interview, I'm not sure how you would do the investigation that day. Look it up on Wikipedia maybe. But he investigated thoroughly, so that the person who had charged him with doing this investigation could have certainty about what he had been taught. So this is incredibly practical for us here today. Incredibly practical for us here today. And I want to start with the first few verses to get the context of what Luke is writing about. And this is Jesus. We're zooming in the history, and Jesus is talking to a group of people. And Luke 15 starts out saying, now the tax collectors and sinners, we're all gathering around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. So this is kind of a typical passage. This was kind of often in Jesus' life, what he was teaching, walking around, doing different things, which is pretty normal. There's a few different audiences here. First, there's just the normal people. And sadly, they were so normal, they didn't even get mentioned necessarily. But there were multitudes of people following Jesus around about everywhere. On top of the normal people, we have the quote-unquote worse than normal people. And then we have the quote-unquote, and please, I'm not judging anyone here today, but just follow me. And then we have the quote-unquote better than normal people. So you have the worse than because you have the tax collectors and the sinners. Quote-unquote worse than tax collectors and sinners. If I could help you think about this a little bit, two ideas. Think of someone who has taken something from you unjustly. That's who they would have been thinking about, tax collectors. Think of someone else who's bucking the social norms and going against all that's considered acceptable. There you've got a little bit of a definition for the sinners. And then you've got the quote-unquote better than normal, these people who in that day and age were the professional religious people who knew the scriptures, who sometimes dedicated their lives to studying and understanding and even teaching the scriptures. So you have the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, sometimes it says scribes, etc. So this is the audience that Jesus has in front of him. And in Luke 15, he goes about telling three stories about what's quote-unquote lost, or if you like it a little bit better, maybe a bit more politically correct, not yet found. Now today, this is not my intention, but likely I'm gonna offend everybody. It's not my intention. But those of you who might consider yourself in the not yet found category are likely going to be already offended because Jesus has identified or categorized, forgive me, as not yet found. But then I'm going to be talking about a few other things which are much more applicable to those of us that are normally in rows and benches and such as we are here today. And it's not my intention, but it's likely I might be a little bit offensive, or as we use what Jesus is saying, might be a little bit offensive to that group as well. So we're going to have a quick summary of the first two parts, and we're going to jump into the third. But basically, the two first stories can be summarized by someone who had something or number of things. One of these things gets lost. They go in search for this thing that was lost until they find it. And as they find it, they call their neighbors and friends and have a party. That's basically the summary of these first two stories. One of them is about a gentleman who has some sheep, and the other is about a lady who has some coins. So we jump in. One of the first ideas is, suppose one of you has 100 sheep. To which all of us are going, yeah, I have 100 sheep, right? No, sometimes this is where we check out, and it's like, no, I don't have 100 sheep, next. No, what's beautiful about Jesus and what's beautiful about the Bible is that the people are like, we see that every day. Yeah, I maybe even have 100 sheep, or my neighbor has 100 sheep. But to make it just a tad bit more practical for us, we might say, I have $100. A man has $100. Maybe a bit more landed in reality, if you are a businessman and maybe have Uber cars, you have 10 Uber vehicles, and one of them gets lost. Suppose you have 100, and one gets lost. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? Maybe you wouldn't go searching for a $1 bill. If you had 10 Uber vehicles and one of them got lost, you'd go searching for the lost Uber vehicle. The idea here, the takeaway, is that we leave the found to find the not yet found. We leave the found to go find the not yet found. Another easier example might be a credit card. Hopefully you don't have 100 credit cards, or maybe not even 10. But if you lose a credit card, you leave the rest of them in your wallet until you find that lost credit card. We leave the found to find the not yet found. First idea. Second, after it's found, in the same way I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. So Jesus is talking about people sinners that are lost. And these first two stories are talking about going out to find these lost people, these lost a sheep or a coin. And he says, there's rejoicing, there's a party. And in these stories, these people, amazing, I love to be their neighbor, they actually throw a party when they find the sheep, when they find the coin. So in our house, we'd have a party like almost every day because I and our kids lose things all the time. And my wife is a professional finder. So we would have parties if we would be like this all the time. And if this is you, please do invite me because we love parties. So this is amazing, the expressive, the joy. Hey, the sheep was lost, we found it, let's have a party. My coin was lost, I found it, let's have a party. There's great celebrating. There's great rejoicing. So the takeaway is, we celebrate when the not yet found is found. This is very basic, I'm aware of that. But it's true. You couldn't find the credit card, you couldn't find the credit card, you couldn't find the credit card. Sweating, worried, calling up the bank, who knows what all you do, and then you find it. Yes. Now, Jesus says something else, which is this, where it gets to be potentially a little bit offensive. He says, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over the one sinner who repents than over the 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. Now, if you're paying attention, my story, and this is not speaking greatly of me, but my story is that I'm maybe one of the more of the 99, because God's grace showed up in my life basically keeping me in rather than pulling me out of. And basically, Jesus is saying, hey, there's more celebration over that one sheep that was lost and was found and brought back than over the 99 who never wandered away. Than over the 99 who are nice and safe and behaving as they should. That's just a tad bit, at least to me, if I can be really honest, a tad bit offensive. It's like, what? Come on. I've been good, man. Takeaway, we celebrate more when the not yet found is found than when the found stays found. We celebrate more when the not yet found is found, and when the found just stays found. You don't celebrate the credit cards that didn't walk out of your wallet. So, not long ago, my third son, we have four, that was intentional. Our third son is named Sebastian, and some great friends of ours actually said that they found the perfect description of him. I agree. They say he's the little Mario Bros. On Star Power all the time. So he's the little guy tearing it up out there after service and maybe before. And one day we were in the United States at this huge department store, Macy's. And this is just, you know, lines and lines and lines of clothing and all kinds of other stuff. And I had our boys. And my wife was doing things that ladies do in big department stores. So I had our boys. And after a little bit, I realized, uh-oh. I don't know where Sebastian's at. So I'm calling and going through the coats and going through the different stuff. Sebastian, where are you? And I don't know time, how long it went, but you as parents know, time stops. A long time did transgress. We were going everywhere. We started calling on the intercoms. I think they called the FBI. That might have been a little bit exaggerating. But like, this was serious. Like, this wasn't like just 2 minutes and... No, this was a big deal. Like, we could not find him. And I was literally starting to run up and down the hallways calling, where's my son? Where's my son? And I started having all these incredibly awful images that come to mind when these things happen. And my wife came back, and I told her, honey, I've got some good news and I've got some bad news. Bad news, because you always start with the bad news. Bad news is can't find Seb. Good news is we still got three others. Not that bad. 25% lost, 75% still here. It's good. No. I don't know who the person was. I don't know if I even managed to say thank you. I left the other boys with someone I had never seen in my life. Great parenting advice. And dropped everything to find this kid. And he literally was a long ways away. Thankfully, someone had found him and was hanging on to him. Here's the deal. Do I love all my boys?
Yeah. What happens to us when one of them goes missing? And this is terrible parenting advice, but I've got to say it. If you are ever feeling like, God, why did you give me these little creatures? Just lose one for a little while, and then you start loving them all over again. terrible parenting advice. But when you lose something that is precious, you literally put on hold and you forget about everything else you already have. And I love my other three boys, but they were in the hands of a total stranger, and I was going after my lost son. Because that is how God loves us. And that is how God goes after those that are not yet found. Which leads us to an important question, which hopefully you ask all the time. So what? Neat story. Yep, heard those parables before. Now what? Well, I'm going to land this. Quick summary. Takeaways: God leaves the found to find the not yet found. God, I went over that pretty quick. First I said we, this has turned into God now, celebrates when the not yet found is found. The third story is commonly known as the prodigal son. It's so well known, I think just about everyone's heard of it. The idea, main story, is there's a father who has two sons, an older brother, a younger brother. The younger brother basically says to his dad, Dad, I don't want to be around anymore. I wish you were dead, because that way I could have what belongs to me once you're gone. That's really important. I really don't care about you at all. I'm out of here. If you're going to die, die, so I can get your money. But if you want to give it to me, that's good. So he takes off, spends it. Doesn't exactly tell us how, at least in Luke, how, but he spends it. Comes to the end, decides, you know what? Even the servants are better off back with Dad. Comes back. Dad, it gives this picture of Dad just almost like waiting, watching out the window. Maybe he's on the front porch in his rocking chair, just waiting, watching with his eyes down the end of the road. Just maybe he'll come back someday. And sure enough, one day he sees his son coming. And it says he drops everything and runs, which culturally was totally unacceptable. Runs, embraces his son, doesn't even let the son give the explanation or give the excuses. He says, no, you're back. Give him a ring. He's once again back in the family. Throws a party. And then the older brother comes back into the scene and is completely frustrated and angry because now he loses something because the younger brother's back, so now he has to give up his part of the inheritance to put up with this kid that came back. And he's not going to this party. He's actually angry at Dad now because, well, he hasn't had a party. What gives? So that's the story in a nutshell. Now here's where it gets super practical. And I told that quickly because I want to land this. A couple important ideas which are super practical for us today. First, the truth is we are all prodigals. We are all prodigals who in some way or fashion started out, wandered away far from home. And we have this tendency to become older brothers. We are all prodigals with this tendency to act like the older brother in this story. Now, just before those of you more experienced and with more primaveras, as we would say in Spanish, more years under your belt than mine, I am not trying to be offensive. I hope to be joining your group in a little while. In other words, I hope to have a long life. I'm not talking about older, the older brother. I'm not talking about older as in age. And actually, it's not talking about more mature either, because in this story and in life, it's evident that age, experience, does not equal maturity. So that's not what we're talking about. We're just talking about people. You can be super young and be like the older brother. You can be experienced in age and be a quote-unquote younger brother. Okay? What I am saying is that the older brothers got there first. So if we're talking about being found, well, the older brothers got there first. Now, why would I say we have a tendency to become like the older brother? Because once we're back, once we're found, we have this tendency to forget where we came from. We have this tendency to forget that once I too was a prodigal. We tend to forget how God's grace showed up in our lives, how God dropped everything to go find us. We forget, and sometimes we even disown that past. Sometimes the older brothers, they're sometimes known for judging the others according to what we now know. I've got to tell this incredible story. We're a house of five guys and one beautiful lady. So this is a house with lots of guy noises, body noises, if you follow me. And just the other day, my second son sneezed incredibly hard at the table. And something that has never before happened. My oldest son looked over at him glaring like he wanted to kill him. Don't tell anybody. And I'm like, whoa, what's going on? Why are you looking at your brother like that? Dad, he just sneezed and he didn't even cover his mouth. Yeah, you've done that like 1,000 times. Yeah, but Dad, in science yesterday, we learned about all these germs that get spread everywhere every time you sneeze. I'm like, yeah, that's what I've been trying to tell you your whole life. As older brothers, once we get it, we tend to judge the others according to what we now know. According to how we now behave. And sometimes we even take it up with God. If we can be totally honest, this is maybe just my story, so this might be a confession. We take it up with God. And sometimes it's like that conversation, the older brother with the father in the prodigal son's story. It's like, so, Dad, do you even really know what all the stuff he's done? Have you heard? I mean, like all of us know, news travels fast. Didn't you watch his Instagram account? It's like, I mean, come on. You don't know what he's done? Have you forgotten where he's been? Have you really considered the mess he made? Dad, have you forgotten what he did to you? Which is all really, really, it's valid. Because it kind of runs down to or ends up being, as older brothers, it's just not fair. How come he gets to go have all this fun? And then he comes back and he's just like me, and I've been working, parable. I've been behaving. I've been doing what I'm supposed to be doing. It's not fair. And for those of us that grew up in churches, that's honestly sometimes the feeling. It's not fair. The truth of the matter is that both brothers were lost. Both brothers were lost. Because neither were living the relationship, were living in the relationship that their father desired with and for them. Neither of them. One actually put wheels on it and left. The other stuck around, but he wasn't connected. I'm going to transition here real quick. The perfect older brother. This is a direct reference to Jesus Christ. The perfect older brother came, left everything to show us how it's done and told us to go and do the same. See, the story was perfect because Jesus told it. But there was someone missing. And I don't know if Jesus was grinning inside and was like, yep, this is all about me. You'll get it later. But the older brother, what does a good older brother do? He helps find his little brother. Like, he's like, Dad, let's go. Hang out. I'll take care of him. Just hang out. I'll go get him. We'll find him. And that's what Jesus did. He's like left heaven and came to seek, to find, to save that which was lost. And he's invited us to go and do the same. Now here's where this, I feel, gets really practical, because my guess is that the majority of us here, because we're here, likely have this tendency, as I do, to be more like the older brother, because we already believe, we've already come home. So what does this mean for us? What does this mean for us? God is actively seeking and patiently waiting for the prodigals to come home. And let's just make really, really clear here. God loves each and every one of us. If we go back to that first story, he loves the 99. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to be offensive in that sense. He loves each and every one of us. His eyes are on the not yet found. He is actively seeking, patiently waiting for the prodigals to come home. Are we going to join God in this mission, in his purpose, what he's up to in this world? Or are we going to complain about not having our own party? You know, it's kind of boring in here. Wish we had more partying going on. You know? And just to throw this out there, this is not in the parable, but food for thought. As the younger brother in the parable was out there doing his stuff and thought about going home, a question would be, as he remembered his older brother, was he all the more inspired to come home? Or was he all the more fearful? Oh, man. Like, it maybe took him another month looking at the way his older brother actually ended up responding. The father's words to his oldest son, we had to celebrate and be glad. Are you kidding? Is there another option? We had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead. He's alive. He was lost. Now he's found. Whoa. So if I could leave a challenge with you, it would be, don't be that brother. Come home. Maybe you're already home, but maybe you're actually not living what God has for all of us. Maybe we're behaving, but actually not living in that close proximity, close relationship that the older brother could have had with his dad as he stayed in the same home, ate the same food, hopefully at the same table. Come home. Maybe, as I mentioned at the beginning, this is your first time back and you're still wandering, and that's okay. It's okay. The door is wide open. We're waiting on the porch. Come home. Come home. And if I can add this, hopefully it's understood the best way, let's party. Let's party. Because that's how big and how important this is. And if your story is at all like mine, we don't even know what hangs in the balance. If I can say this, because I think it's true, the eternity of the people not yet found, what hangs in the balance as we live as those who got here first. If we will encourage, if we will invite, if we will make places where the prodigals, the younger brothers, those that are searching, maybe those that are running away, can come back home. Or if as they think of us, they run harder and further still. Personally, this moves me. This has got a hold of me. I believe this represents our God. I believe this represents the heart of God for each one of us. This is the why behind the what. This is the why behind the what, because God so loved the world, each and every one of us, that he gave his only son, that the big brother came down from heaven, that whosoever would believe in him would be found, would not perish, would have life, that there would be parties, eternal in heaven. So let's go. Let's live that heart that the Father has for each of us. Let's draw people in. Maybe not by how much we talk, but how we love, how we embrace, how we invite back home. Would you pray with me?